Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the November 6th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola City Council, renamed baseball park at Moore Park by Ben Crane. The City and Alley Committee officially renamed the baseball field at Moore Park to Edwin Dale Buxton Field in memory of Ed Buxton. According to an email from Kevin Monahan to City Administrator Bill Wagoner, Buxton essentially gave rebirth to baseball in Arcola in the late 1980s. The fact that both programs have existed is a testimonial that his efforts have made an impact on the city. Monahan also requested that a plaque be placed on or near the soon-to-be-built concession stand explaining Buxton's contribution to the program. The city also approved a change order amounting to $24,000 and a pay request of $264,000 regarding the Libman truck route. The change order was issued due to conflicts in the field and manholes found under asphalt overlay. The council also approved Ordinance No. 24S14, which is a levy and assessment of taxes for the fiscal year beginning May 1st and ending on April 30th, 2025. An abatement of taxes for General Obligation Bonds 2021 series was considered and approved, amounting in $112,000. Finally, the council approved an easement to Ameren, Illinois for overhead and underground electric lines at the south edge of the wastewater treatment plant. The next article, Villa Grove City Council, questions and concerns around the TIF district. The Villa Grove City Council met for a public hearing regarding the new TIF-2 district that has recently been established. The city representatives opened the meeting by explaining exactly what a TIF district is and how it can be an asset to residents of the district. A packed house, including Cassandra Fudge, asked questions about language concerning the city's ability and intention to take possession of properties within the TIF district and was reassured that the city has no intention of doing so. Tom Bretz questioned why the TIF district includes so much undeveloped land along the Amara River, and city representatives answered that it was part of the entire parcel of ground in the TIF district. Jeff Markle asked if the rest of the city would share the burden of the TIF district equally and was assured that there was no additional tax burden on residents within the TIF district, so there would be no burden to share. Stacy Burnett, whose residence isn't within the TIF-2 district, then questioned why her taxes increased so dramatically as part of the TIF-1 district and was assured that the City of Villa Grove and TIF district don't set tax rates. Mayor Pro Tem Boots Blarney, serving in place of Mayor Cassandra Eversole Gunter, called for the hearing's adjournment, noting that it was originally scheduled for 30 minutes. She then called the regular monthly committee of the whole meeting to order at 6:32 p.m. with all aldermen, Administrator Jacqueline Athey, Chief of Police Cole Tibbetts, Public Works Director Mark McSell, and Clerk Osborne also present. Finding no public comments, Blaney then called for city department reports. Athey reported that she had completed the audit report reply inserts and that the tax was reply report was ready to go to the state. She then noted that the city's contract with Google had been renewed, and she recently attended a meeting of the Dietrich Redevelopment Committee regarding low prices for lots to spur development of new subdivisions. She also asked for consensus to approve painting of the newly purchased fire truck at a cost of $13,900. McSell reported that bathrooms at all parks were being winterized. He also noted that the Harrison Street Bridge sidewalk had been temporarily repaired and that a permanent fix was in the works. McSell then reported that the generator for the community center was set to be installed in December. He finally reported that new drain heads had ordered at a cost of $750 each. Chief Tibbetts reported that the job posting for a new patrol officer had been posted. He also noted that several posted speed limit signs didn't match ordinances and that he would be working to correct the issue. He also noted that ordinance violation letters were being sent to offenders and that he is interested in bringing a canine officer to Villa Grove. Alderman Tony Hooker then asked what the overall cost would be to do so, and he stated that Lieutenant Howard, canine officer from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, had said that the overall cost for the county was $31,000, but they had recouped over $15,000 in grant funding. Administrator Athey reported the new assistant director for the community center would begin on November 12th. City Attorney Mark Miller was on hand after a query from the council stated that there were ways to amend ordinance that for at-fault land boards who continue to sidestep regulations. He also stated there were existing ordinances in other cities to manage the resale of properties that had been possessed by the city. Blaney then moved to a new business, with Attorney Miller finding no conflict of interest and Administrator Athey serving on the board of the VG Chamber of Commerce. It was noted it could serve as a way to bridge the chamber and the city for future collaborations. Finding no further business, Alderman Hooker called for adjournment at 7:25 p.m. The next article, Arcola's school board committee mulls over future capital projects, by Ben Crane. Members of the Arcola school board met last Wednesday to discuss future capital projects within the building. Superintendent Tom Mulligan, Julie Leva Sanchez, Sue Stout, Casey Conlon, Jeremy Schonkweiler, and school board president Luca Schonkweiler made up the committee, while head of maintenance Ken Vogt sat in to give expert opinion. Mulligan prepared a report with scheduled and potential future capital projects. In the future capital projects list, they are separated by priority from high to very low. This isn't a set list. I really want this to be a discussion, Mulligan clarified. The committee discussed various cosmetic upgrades to freshen up the building, as Stout said. Both the high school office and cafeteria entrances were deliberated over, with different points being made. We don't have to do a complete remodel to freshen it up, Leva Chavez said. Other areas of the building were brought up, including painting the high school hallways and putting a potential wall wrap in the hallway where the class photos are located. Vogt made sure to remind the committee of pressing needs, such as crack filling in the high school parking lot and a potential complete pavement of the CARP cafeteria lot. Mulligan also mentioned upgrades to the gym sound systems. Lucas Schonkweiler then brought up the potential of removing gumball and dead trees from the property, citing them as potential hazard for students. Overall, the meeting did not result in any set-in-stone plans. However, the committee plans to continue to deliberate and discuss potential upcoming capital projects in the future. Another article, Condo Reflects on Journey to the Great Pumpkin Patch, Farm Between Arthur and Arcola Concludes 35th Season, by Ben Crane. Mac Condell is working at a botanical garden in South Africa in 2002, and he turns the key on his rental car. I rented a car with a German student, Condell recounted. She loves succulents. I love kurbits, pumpkins, squash, and gourds. So we rented a car, and we traveled 3,000 miles around South Africa. I had a kurbit-colored lens, as we used to call it, and she had a succulent-colored lenses, and we just drove around. Their goal, finding kurbits and succulents that were interesting. You talk to people, you don't know their language, they don't know your language, and within 5 minutes you're talking about agriculture in a rural setting. You're connected. You can talk about a pumpkin, and somehow we were. Condo carefully balanced a pumpkin on his newest installation, and they takes a step back. They've been featured at the White House, Martha Stewart's daytime talk show, and now at Grange Grove in front of the large cement columns at Memorial Stadium. The kurkurbits come together to form the University of Illinois logo, the block eye. It's the first day of November, and Condell and his crew just wrapped up the 35th season of The Great Pumpkin Patch yesterday. His journey has taken him across the world, studying and discovering kurkurbits, which he now uses to create organic art. The Great Pumpkin Patch has a unique, curated feel that Condell describes as a mix between a botanical garden, a park, a farm, an open-air European market that aims to capture the rural spirit of harvest season. Condell finds it humbling that he has been able to see his past employees and families visiting the patch, reflecting on the impact it has had over the years. To see multi-generations of people that have been impacted from an employee standpoint, let alone the 1.2 million people that have visited over the last 35 years, is just crazy, Condell explained. Condell's eye for kurkurbits and other items made the patch unique and has been refined through the years. We want to push the envelope to what people think a pumpkin patch is. We want to be authentic, Condell said. We want our visitors to continue to make memories and remember that they were here 5 years ago, 15 years ago. The farm's creative process involves repurposing materials, sketching ideas, and collaborating with builders like Arcola native Chris Kessler to excavate new and interesting displays. Old wooden ladders and sinks are examples of irregular materials Condell uses for his artwork. I have a passion for garden art. I kind of want to give these items one last hurrah, Condell said. But it's not only that, but the kurkurbits themselves that are unique to the farm. These are varieties that nobody else on the planet grows. So if we don't grow it, or if we don't bring it back to life, essentially, what we'd like to do is give it platform. They're underutilized, underappreciated vegetables, Condell said. As for the 36th season for the Great Pumpkin Patch, Condell plans to continue to evolve and experiment with his kurkurbits. We're trying to open people's eyes to the diversity of the pumpkin family, and we can do that, I think, by creating mind-blowing, eye-popping displays. And if that's the hook, then I don't care what the hook is, but then all of a sudden I think we're creating a more educated consumer, which means a more educated human being, which means hopefully someone a little more open-minded, maybe a little more willing to think outside the box, maybe a little more kind, maybe a little more love, maybe a little, you know. So if kurkurbits in a weird way of a way can help kind of soften people, I think that's awesome. In the last first pay article, Claire Meyer earns top FFA's top honor. Tuscola Claire Meyer has joined yet another elite group. She earned her American degree, the highest award achievable by the Future Farmers of America. Less than 1% of FAA students earn this award. Meyer, the daughter of Mark and Laura Meyer, is also Miss Moultrie Douglas County and is a former Miss Tuscola and Section 17 president of the Illinois FFA Association. She's also studied abroad in Belize. The Lakeland College student, who also won a Douglas County Farm Bureau scholarship, is planning for a career in agriculture, broadcasting, or in human resources. Tuscola High School posted a photo of her with the newest award on social media and said, "The amount of work and dedication it takes to achieve this award is unmatched. Claire has had such an amazing FFA journey, and we are so proud of her and all of her accomplishments. She is the perfect representation of an ideal FFA member, and we are so lucky that she is a Tuscola alum." We'll move now to the obituaries. Larry J. Schweigart, age 73 of Tuscola, passed away at 11:20 p.m. on Saturday, November 2, 2024, at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, November 7, 2024, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, with Pastor Bennett Woods officiating. Burial will follow in the Tuscola Township Cemetery, with military graveside rites accorded. Friends and family are invited to gather for visitation 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Michael Lee Hackett, 40, of Tuscola, passed away peacefully in his sleep Sunday, November 3, 2024, at 5:40 p.m. A service celebrating his life will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, November 8, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, with the Reverend Terry Smith officiating. Visitation will take place 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Nicole M. Driggers, 50, of Tuscola, passed away on Friday, November 1, 2024, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Nicole's life will be held on Saturday, November 16th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Corn Crib in Newman, 107 East Yates Street. Memorial donations may be made to Carl Hospice. Robert Bob Frank Jones, 94, of Newman, passed away on November 1, 2024, at the Newman Rehabilitation and Health Center. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, November 5th, at Joins Funeral Home, Newman. A private family funeral service will be held on Wednesday, November 6th. Burial will be in the Newman Township Cemetery in Newman. Danica Tuell passed away peacefully on October 30th, 2024, in her home, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation and funeral will be held November 9th at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Villa Grove. Visitation begins at 9 a.m. with Mass starting at 10 a.m. Burial will be at the St. Mary Cemetery in Pisotum following Mass. Tom Jones of Paxton passed away Thursday, October 24, 2024 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. He was 81. Visitation was held Tuesday, October 29th at Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton. There was a brief service at the funeral home, followed by a graveside service at Villa Grove Cemetery in Villa Grove. Tom's niece, the Reverend Jennifer Wilson, provided services. Paul Edward Bretz, 95, of Villa Grove, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, October 30th, 2024, at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. Funeral services were held at the Joins Funeral Home in Villa Grove on Monday, November 4th, with a visitation prior to the service. Burial followed the service at the Murdoch Cemetery in Murdoch. Oma J. Schrock, 73, of Arcola, passed away at 1:11 a.m. Sunday, November 3rd, 2024, at her residence. Funeral services will be held at 9 a.m. Wednesday, November 6th at Duane Hirschberger's residence, 405 North County Road 400 East in rural Arcola. Bishop Jacob M. Stutzman will officiate. Burial will be in the Miller Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation was held Monday, November 4th and Tuesday, November 5th, all at Duane J. Hirschberger's residence. Anna Marie Miller passed away on Friday, October 25th, 2024, surrounded by family. Services in celebration of Marie's life were held Thursday, October 31st at the Arthur United Methodist Church, followed by funeral services. Burial followed at the Arthur Cemetery. Schrader Funeral Home Arthur assisted the family with arrangements. Lester Charles Price, a proud veteran of the United States Air Force, passed away on Tuesday, October 29, 2024, at Kirby Medical Center. Visitation was held Saturday, November 2nd at Heinz Funeral Home, Bement. Graveside services with military rites by Arthur Parker American Legion Post No. 620 were Saturday at St. Omer Cemetery in Ashmore. Pastor Paul Thiemann officiated. Memorial contributions can be made to the Albert Parker American Legion Post No. 620 or the Arcola VFW. Anna Marie Miller passed away on Friday, October 25th, 2024, surrounded by her family. Services in celebration of Marie's life were held Thursday, October 31st at the Arthur United Methodist Church, followed by funeral services. Burial followed at the Arthur Cemetery. Schrader Funeral Home Arthur assisted the family with arrangements. Sarah J. Stutzman, 41, of Arcola, passed away at 9:05 p.m. on Monday, October 28, 2024, at her residence. Funeral services were held Thursday, October 31st at the Sunnyside Mennonite Church, rural Arcola. Pastor Brian Pertersheim officiated. Burial was in the Miller Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation was Tuesday, October 29th and Wednesday, October 30th at the Sunnyside Mennonite Church. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. There is an article, Toys for Tots Kicks Off Season. Toys for Tots, a 74-year-old national charitable program run by the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, provides happiness and hope to less fortunate children during each Christmas holiday season. The toys, books, and other gifts collected and distributed by our Marines and volunteers during the Christmas season offer these children recognition, confidence, and a positive memory for a lifetime. Toys for Tots also provides support year-round to less fortunate families experiencing challenges and exceptional circumstances, thus sending a message of hope beyond the holiday season. It is such experiences that help children become responsible citizens and caring members of their community. Last year, the Marine Toys for Tots program fulfilled the holiday hopes and dreams of 10.3 million less fortunate children in over 800 communities nationwide. Since 1947, over 301 million children have been assisted. The Marine Toys for Tots Foundation is a not-for-profit organization authorized by the U.S. Marine Corps and the Department of Defense to provide fundraising and other necessary support for the annual Marine Corps Reserve Toys for Tots program. Locally, Toys for Tots helped get toys to over 650 children in Douglas and Coles County in our eighth year. These children rely on our generous donations so that they can buy the highest quality, new, unwrapped toys. Coordinator Sean Connor said, please consider supporting our mission and donating to this great cause. For more information, you can visit the website at Tuscola-IllinoisToysForTots.org. SBL Holiday Festival returning to SBL campus. For the first time since 2019, the Sarah Bush Lincoln Holiday Festival will be held at the Lumpkin Education Center on the hospital's main campus. We're excited to once again host the holiday festival here at SBL's campus and offer the community a fun way to kick off the holiday season, SBL Special Events Officer Kim Lockhart said. The services that benefit from the holiday festival provide crucial care across the region, so we're grateful to everyone who participates during the week. An online auction starts at 8 a.m. Wednesday, November 13th. More than 80 items designated by SBL employees, area residents, and businesses are available. Items include holiday-themed wooden trees, fresh greens from Hager Tree Farm, and more. The online auction ends at 8 p.m. Monday, November 18th. Friends Night Out returns from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 14th at the Lumpkin Education Center, entrance C on the north side of campus. For a fee, people can enjoy a signature drink and get an exclusive preview of everything the festival has to offer. The SBL Gift Shop pop-up holiday boutique will also be open. From 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, November 15th, community members can explore the festival's offering, including the online and live auction items and the SBL's Gift Shop pop-up holiday boutique in the Lumpkin Education Center. And Santa arrives at 3 p.m. Friday. Pictures with Santa during Cookies with the Claws are from 3 to 8 p.m. on Friday. Rounding out the weekend is the gala and live auction starting with a cocktail hour at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, November 16th. The gala and live auction begins at 7, featuring 30 items. Tickets for the gala and live auction are sold out, but tickets for Friends Night Out are still available. Holiday Festival t-shirts are also available if you cannot attend any of the events but still want to support SBL. To purchase Friends Night Out tickets, t-shirts, donate, or get more information, visit sarahbush.org/holidayfestival or call SBL Health Foundation at 217-258-2511. The online auction can also be accessed at this website beginning Monday, November 11th. Another article, Tuscola Methodist Group to hold chili fundraiser for Children's Home. For many years now, the Tuscola United Methodist Men, TUMM, have raised funds to support Chaddock Children's Foundation with our Chili for Chaddock supper. They're planning to serve Chili for Chaddock again this year on November 21st, beginning at 5 p.m. at the Tuscola United Methodist Church. All are invited. The group said to please come, invite your family, friends, and neighbors, and enjoy food, fellowship, and the chili or vegetable soup, All net proceeds by donation will go to the Chaddock Children's Foundation. Located in Quincy, Chaddock is an internationally recognized faith-based leader in the treatment of children and families suffering from the effects of severe trauma and attachment-related issues. Chaddock serves nearly 400 children per day through their residential treatment programs, on-campus school, and foster and adoption services. Emotionally and psychologically scarred children from 34 different states have been enrolled in their developmental trauma and attachment program, with 90% successfully completing treatment and returning home to loving families. In addition to the direct care services they give children and families on their 30-acre campus, Chaddock educates other providers around the world on the DTAP model. Chaddock staff have provided training and consultation to other mental health professionals from 5 different continents. Chaddock has published 2 books and contributed countless articles to peer-reviewed professional publications related to the treatment of trauma and attachment issues. You can find more information about Chaddock Children's Fund at chaddock.org. Another article, utility assistance applications open for low-income Illinoisans. New discounts available this year for natural gas customers, by Andrew Adams of Capital News, Illinois. The state's low-income home energy assistance program is accepting applications for all households beginning Friday, November 1st. The program offers financial assistance for utility bills to low-income families. Other discounts are also available, even if someone is not enrolled in the LIHEAP. Application is open on October 1st for adults 60 and older, individuals with a disability, family with children under age 5, and households that are disconnected from the utilities or energy vendors, have a disconnected date within 7 days, or whose propane tanks are less than 25% full. Community auction agencies, the local organizations which administer LIHEAP, accept applications on the first-come, first-served basis through the middle of August, although applications will close earlier if funds run out, so those interested in applying should do so sooner rather than later. Households with incomes lower than double the federal poverty level are eligible for the program. That works out to be $2,510 on a 30-day period for individuals, $3,407 for households with 2 members, $4,303 for households with 3 individuals, and higher for larger households. Higher income thresholds are available at the state's Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity website. Changes in 2024. Beginning in October, National Gas Utilities implemented a new set of bill discounts for low-income customers after being required to do so by state regulators at the Illinois Commerce Commission. These discounts are available to any household under 3 times the federal poverty level. Those who receive LIHEAP assistance are automatically eligible for the new discounts and will be enrolled automatically, but those making between 2 and 3 times the poverty level and those who are not enrolled in LIHEAP can apply for these new discounts directly with their utility. Utility bills for these enrolled in the discount program should be lowered by 5% for those in the highest eligible income bracket to between 75 and 83% for those making less than half the federal poverty level, depending on the utility company. Families shouldn't have to decide between putting food on the table or heating their homes this winter, ICC Chairman Doug Scott said in a news release. The state's new low-income discount rates will make it easier for low-income families to manage their gas bills. All households that meet the income requirements for these discounts can receive the new rates. Similar programs offering low-income discounts for water and electric utility bills are expected to be offered in 2025, according to the ICC. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. Another article, Antique Shows Holiday Open Houses in Arthur, November 8th through 9th. 2 days to shop and explore as a little bit of everything can be found in Arthur, Amish County on Friday, November 8th and Saturday, November 9th. 2 of the area's 7 antique shows offering their finest selections of primitives and antique take place in Arthur. Homesteaders Folk Art and Antique Show celebrating the holiday returns to their location at 1211 North Vine Street, Arthur Sale Barn. Early buying preview will be from 2 to 6 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Hours are 10 to 3 p.m. This show is a quintessential gathering of some of the best dealers in country antiques, primitive collectibles, and folk art. A Gathering on the Prairie Country Primitive Antique Show and Sale be held at the Auto Center on Saturday, November 9th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Over 50 dealers specializing in early Americana, country primitives, including furniture, kitchen antiques, early lighting, textiles, stoneware, tinware, folk art, baskets, woodenware, and so much more. The center is located 1/2 mile south of Arthur off Route 133. Get a jump start on Christmas shopping as the holidays are just around the corner. An array of downtown Arthur businesses, Amish furniture shops, antiques, art gallery, and gift shops, boutiques, and more will take part in one or both days of next weekend's Christmas open house event to get the local holiday shopping season underway. Stores will offer great gifts and holiday decor along with special sales and promotions for the annual event. The Arthur United Methodist Church will once again be hosting their Spirit of Holidays Bazaar both Friday and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the Fellowship Hall at 128 East Illinois Street. Even Santa's talking about this one. Be sure to take a break and grab a bite to eat, as the area has plenty of down-home cooking from amazing breakfast buffets to just like mom's fried chicken to scrumptious homemade pies. Another article, Arcola High School's Marching Band Concludes a Successful Competition Season. The Arcola High School Marching Band concluded its competitive season on Saturday, October 26. Their field show this season was entitled Dream Skates and featured the following music: Enchanted, Taylor Swift, Yellow, Coldplay, and Skyfall of Stars, Coldplay. The season looks to be their most successful to date in many years, taking home first place in two competitions. The journey had begun long before competitions kicked off. Throughout the summer, the band participated in an intensive percussion camp June 17th through 21st, where the percussion students learned the fundamentals needed to perform this year's show. The children also learned the drumline cadences played in this year's parade. On July 24th through 26th and July 29th through 30th, they hosted a mini camp where all of the students learned marching fundamentals and the music for this year's competitive show. Following the mini camps, the band met for a full comprehensive band camp August 5th through the 9th, where students were able to hone their skills and learn the competitive production. The students also learned how to work together as a team so they could be successful both on and off the field. Once the school year began, rehearsals were on Monday and Wednesday evenings. This is where students dedicated themselves to perfecting their drill moves and music. Their commitment was evident as they tackled both challenging pieces of music along with challenging drill moves. The tireless hours of the staff, directors, and students created an atmosphere of enthusiasm and motivation. The competitive season officially began with a strong performance on September 21st in Robinson. They were put into a tough class, but the students never gave up and put up a fight. At the end of the evening, they heard their name announced for both the coveted People's Choice Award and third place in Class 1A. The positive and constructive feedback from both the instructors and judges bolstered their confidence and set the bar high for the rest of the season to come. The following Saturday, on September 28th, the band performed at the Mount Zion Marching Music Game, where again they were put into very tough competition with five other bands. The band took the field with renewed energy and focus. Following the performance, it was a long wait until the awards ceremony. They heard their name called for first place in Class 1A, best percussion performance in Class 1A, best drum major in Class 1A. They showed the students how hard work and dedication in rehearsals can pay off following Robinson's competition. Moving forward in their third competition of the season at Eastern Illinois University, the spotlight shined bright on the Color Guard, which won first place award for best auxiliary in Class 1A. As the season reached its peak on October 26th, the band delivered a stunning performance in their final competition in Oblong. The band clinched first place in Class 1A, along with accolades for best percussion, best music, and best auxiliary. The culmination of their hard work and dedication was celebrated in the annual Fall Follies Parade, the largest nighttime parade in Illinois. The band placed third among seven other marching bands of the combined class and also earned the title of Best Color Guard. "This has truly been our most successful season in a long time," said band director Kevin Boyle. "Dedication shown during percussion camp, band camp, and after-school rehearsals has paid off. Our students have poured their hearts into their performance, and the results reflect that. I hope my students forever cherish the memories they made during this unforgettable season." The band is under the leadership of Kevin Boyle, band director, and receives assistance from Jill Raymond, color guard, Christopher Kennelly, percussion director and show designer, and Hunter Dorman, visual music instructor. As the band looks ahead to the future, the band is filled with excitement and ready to go inspire the community through music and performance for many years to come, the director said. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.